2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
What's up, everybody? I'm Mike Wilson with Any Hour Services, and we're proud to help bring you this podcast. If you ever need a resource for information about your home's electrical, plumbing, heating, or air conditioning system, you can find Any Hour Services on Facebook, YouTube, or online at anyhourservices.com.
Welcome back to the JMAC News Show. Glad to have you with us today. I'm Jason Perry, the director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics. I'm filling in for Jay. As you may have heard in the last couple segments, Jay will be back at 2:50 today to talk with his listeners, to discuss his absence. I recommend you stay tuned. But first, we get to hear from a couple great reporters. First, Lisa Riley Roche, political reporter with the Deseret News, is staying with us. Thank you for that, Lisa.
Of course.
But also joining us is Katie McKellar, the local government reporter for the Deseret News. Katie, you've been busy the last few days.
Yes, I have.
Yes, I guess always. But I want to talk about some stories that you are working on right now for the Salt Lake City mayor's race.
Yes.
I know it's summer. People want to be on vacation and doing other things, but we've got to show up and vote. Let's talk about that for just a moment. Tell us, we have eight candidates that are currently vying for this position. I've enjoyed reading your stories about this. When you have this many candidates going forward, how do any of them try to differentiate themselves, at least what you have seen so far?
Right. It's tough. Eight candidates, crowded race. A lot of the issues, a lot of the candidates are very similar on their stances on issues like the inland port and environment and air quality. Those are the kind of like the highlighted issues in this race so far. Inland port being the biggest hot button issue. Honestly, because there are so many, people really just need to be paying attention and they need to be reading reports. They honestly, if they can interact personally with these candidates, do that. Go to their candidate website pages. They're very similar. It's just a tough race because there's so many.
Yeah, that's true. And their positions on issues seem to be exceptionally close to each other.
They are, yeah. And there are some differences. Some of the likely front runners like Escamilla and Jim DeBacchus, I mean, they kind of stand more on, they emphasize partnering with state leaders, having a good relationship with the state. Others like David Garbett kind of has taken a stronger stance against the inland port. Others saying we'd only support a zero emissions port. It's just kind of across the gamut. And some of the lesser known candidates like maybe Rainer Huck or Richard Goldberger don't support the lawsuit at all. And Rainer Huck says I think the port should be in state control. And Goldberger says we shouldn't even have that. We should have some kind of hub instead. So it's just across the board.
One of the interesting things that I've been hearing from the candidates is sort of this emerging trend, and it is this. You understand our policies, or at least you think we're all very similar, but it comes down to execution.
Right.
How are we going to do in this role? So I that's really what I'm starting to see. And how are they starting to position themselves as you talk to each one of these candidates?
How are they starting to position themselves? I mean, some of the things, what's really telling is campaign finance and who's able to kind of on the ground go door to door or raise a lot of money. There's the biggest fundraiser there is Ibarra, David Ibarra. He's really brought in a lot more cash than a lot of the candidates since the campaigning has started. But others like Escamilla, Jim DeBacchus has kind of got the most individual donations. So it's just kind of on the ground, and what they're able to accomplish there is what will turn up at the polls or at the the August primary.
That's true. It's been interesting to see everyone kind of just showing who has the biggest pile of cash as evidence of support. But Lisa, if you don't mind, one thing that you and I have talked about in the past with these elections is how important endorsements are. You know, sometimes elected officials think, I'm just going to shake enough hands. But at some point, what you need is a popular figure to say, I support this person. They can do it. Talk about that for just a minute, how important it is and why these candidates are starting to get those endorsements.
Well, clearly, if you like one politician and that politician tells you, hey, look over at this person for this office, I like them, I think they'll do a good job, that's going to carry some weight with you as a voter. So I think that will certainly be important in this race, where, as Katie has said, the candidates are very close. Salt Lake City typically sees itself as the state's liberal enclave, right? We look for the most liberal candidates to represent a point of view that we don't see much of outside of city limits. So I found... Just anecdotally, my neighborhood, the Avenues, typically elects the most liberal candidates to the state legislature, to city and county council, and certainly for mayor. But I've noticed just driving around that there are lots of different candidate signs that no one has emerged as that liberal front runner that everyone will band behind. And I think you have people like Escamilla and DeBacchus that have pretty extensive state legislative experience and
more name recognition.
Exactly, known for, as you were saying earlier, execution will be a big part of that, and they have a record of getting bills passed, mm-hmm. of getting attention paid to issues, and so I would have expected maybe to see a little more of them, but a number of other candidates are also getting attention up at least up in my neighborhood.
And they have name recognition in neighborhoods like City Councilwoman Erin Mendenhall and former City Councilman Stan Penfold. They're known in their neighborhoods. So something to keep in mind.
Yeah, it's true. And it's interesting what you say about kind of where they are on the spectrum as to how they do. But Katie, I'm curious with the people you're interviewing, whether or not that is where Salt Lake City voters are. Are they still looking for the most liberal? Are they looking for the person with the highest name ID? And while you're answering that, why do people care about who the mayor of Salt Lake City is anyway?
They
do. I just wonder what you have to say about
well, it's
that.
It's a big deal. I mean, it's the capital city of the state, and relationships with state leaders and county leaders are really important here at the capital city. And it's tough to say which way people are leaning and who they'll throw their support behind. But I mean, Alliance for a Better Utah, they did a poll that showed. Maybe that likely front runner is DeBacchus. This was, again, a poll back in June. Things can change quickly. But margin of error was really narrow on other candidates, so it's hard to say who else could be a likely front runner. But, I mean, DeBacchus has been well known as an LGBT advocate. He's long been that. And we saw Mayor Biskupski, openly gay, get elected in 2015. That obviously, it's an important vote in Salt Lake City. So... the LGBT support. So maybe seeing that support come out in this election, we might see that again.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate that. I want to go back to a couple of things you just discussed. We had a lot of people now texting in on the Utah Community Credit Union text line right now, really asking about the point you made. We don't need to get into any of the stuff that just happened on Inland Port over the last couple of days, but our listeners are wondering what kind of impact will that issue have on the next mayor for Salt Lake City?
Well, I think it's going to have a huge impact on the mayor and this race leading up to the primary and into the general election. It's the most hot button issue right now. And so I'm sure voters are going to be paying attention to which, like, the stances each candidate have against on the Inland Port, whether they support it or not, what kind of Inland Port they support at all, if any. And so people will really be paying attention to that.
Uh-huh. Lisa, I want to hear about your thoughts on what happens after this primary on August 13th. All right. So you have really oftentimes you have two big races. You have your positioning as you're trying to get to the primary, and you have how the race changes after. Describe what you think is going to happen after we get those two final candidates.
Well, remember, this is an open seat. The incumbent, Jackie Biskupski, chose not to run. So you have a lot of people coming forward to get in the race, maybe that might not have done it otherwise, might not have run against an incumbent. But after a primary, what you see is kind of a coalescing of the remaining candidates behind one or the other. And that may go a long way, going back to what you were asking about endorsements, that may go a long way to deciding who's ultimately going to win in November. Whoever ends up maybe getting the most endorsements from the people that trail a little further down the list, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, this really great analysis. We're going to know those two candidates very soon. I know we'll be talking to both of you again about that. So thank you for your great insights today. We appreciate that. Well, I'm Jason Perry, filling in on the JMAC News Show today. Glad to have you with us. Remember, JMAC will be on later at 2:50 today. Our next segment you won't want to miss either. We'll get to hear from Natalie Gochner with the Gardner Policy Institute. What's happening in the state of Utah? Our demographics and, of course, that census question. Please come back.
JMAC.
What's up, everybody? I'm Mike Wilson with Any Hour Services, and we're proud to help bring you this podcast. If you ever need a resource for information about your home's electrical, plumbing, heating, or air conditioning system, you can find Any Hour Services on Facebook, YouTube, or online at anyhourservices.com.